Hey, my name is Dwight Bernier, and I want to welcome you to the Acts 29 Canada podcast. Well, welcome to the Acts 29 Canada podcast. Jordan and I are here.
We're here again.
Here again. This is our, I think, our fourth episode doing this together. Yeah, I enjoy our time.
Me too.
Together. Yeah,
me too.
Apart.
It's been great. Apart, yeah. But together.
And this is like great. An extrovert, introvert's dream. Like, get
no
to
kidding.
Be together and then leave.
That's right.
Right away.
So, exactly.
I'm not saying that's my desire, but that's our reality. So,
true.
Man, today we're going to talk to Brad Millett. He's a guy I've known for, there aren't many people I know in our city for more than 10 years, but he's a guy that I've known for quite a while. And, you know, tracked with him at not the beginning of his ministry, but pretty close to it. I started visiting Montreal and exploring this call to what I perceived to be a call to Quebec and right. what that would look like. And he was part of conversations I had. But I know that we're going to get into this in the interview that we have with him. But one of the things that we need to just realize is how siloed the church can be.
It's true.
In Canada, well, anywhere, but especially
for sure.
In Canada, how lonely it can be to be a pastor.
Yep.
How platforms actually maybe create a different kind of silo that you think that someone, because they have some sort of weird Christian celebrity platform, that they would be most connected. But in fact, it could be that they're actually less connected than anyone else. And it's just a rare thing to see. Lots of churches working together, you know, for the good of their city or region. So,
I mean, anytime that you get the chance to be in a place together, I think that, I mean, in our experience and even in my experience, sometimes naturally and not beneficial at all, there can almost be some competition that exists amongst churches that are in the same city. And, you know, the reality of the gospel is that we have the opportunity to be able to do this together, that we're on the same team. And so we should be doing that together for the good of our city, for the good of our county, for the good of our country. Most certainly, if we want to take it to that broad scale. And so the topic that we have and really the heart that comes out from Brad and from yourself as well is something that I find and I've found, even as we have the opportunity to chat with Brad, so, so valuable, and something that I think would be so, so important to see really brought to cities, communities all across our country, most certainly.
Yeah, I mean, one of the ways I remember teaching like some adult Sunday school thing in you know, Maine before I moved to Canada, and it was years ago. And somehow I stumbled upon, you know, John 13, 34 and 35, where Jesus is saying that basically people are going to know you're my disciples by how you love one another.
That's right.
And I'm like, oh, that's weird, because we study apologetics and we study evangelism and we study, you know, what to say to people. And Jesus lays down this interesting apologetic of, well, the way you love one another is going to speak to who I am. But then he gives another one in John 17, which is even more strange to me, because I believe it, I just don't understand it. And he prays in John 17, 20 to 23, that people are going to understand that the Father sent the Son by how his people are in unity with one another.
That's right.
And it's like, man, people are so in my well, in Canada, okay, Western society, people are very much confused about the church.
That's right.
And as at least pastors, right? Let's not even talk the church.
Mm-hmm.
At least pastors, we should be the ones demonstrating.
Absolutely.
Not should, because you need to behave correctly, but out of the gospel motivations that we have, that we should be the ones who are loving one another and speaking well of one another and being united. Not in front of the world first, but in front of our churches.
Absolutely.
And that they can see that, oh, yeah, there is only one church in Montreal. There is only one church in Barrie.
That's right.
Like, our pastors are friends. And I'm not saying we need to be friends with everyone, or that we're going to necessarily agree with everyone who calls themselves a pastor, but that we can figure out how do we work together. We're here.
That's right.
We can either fight, or we figure out what level can we work together on. And I don't think we get into this in the podcast at all, but you know, partnering together, I think of it as three levels. I think it's from Finding the Right Hills to Die On by was it Gavin Ortland that wrote that?
Yeah.
But I'm not necessarily talking about all that, but like the right levels of partnership is like, who can we partner with that like I just completely trust completely, like theologically, philosophically, everything. Like that's like a level one partnership. Let's plant churches together. Let's go to the moon together. Like let's go as far as we possibly can. And then level two is like, man, we're Christians.
Yeah.
Most likely.
That's right.
We're Christians. And we love Jesus. We want to see his kingdom come. But there are enough differences that maybe we're not going to plant churches together.
Yeah.
Maybe we're not going to build an organization together. But what can we do together?
Mm-hmm.
How could we be making common disciples and do that? And then there's a level three that I think of, and that's along the lines of like, man, where Jesus said, you know, if they're not against us, they're for us.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not taking that out of context, you know, to prove a point. But
yeah.
The idea that, man, if people in the city, they might not be followers of Jesus, but if they care about anti-human trafficking, if they care about the importance and worth of individuals, if they care about justice, if they care about the poor, well, man, I can get behind all those with anyone.
Yep.
We don't need to do a theological sniff check to find out if we can do it. It's like, let's run after those things. So I know what we talk about with Brad is more of like that level one partnership, but I think it's also really important for us to be looking and be humble enough to think like, what are the level two and level three ways that we can work together with other people in our city, region, province, nation?
Absolutely. For the sake of the gospel, right? Because that's ultimately what we're trying to seek to bear witness to, like you've talked about already. And that's just such an important thing. And then again, to back, and we talked about this too, I love this so much, but in terms of the importance of that kind of thing for pastors and church leaders to feel that kind of sense of community and to have that safe place is such an important and vital thing too for the health of those pastors, most certainly, but then the health of our churches as well. Such an important thing. We touched on all of that and so much more in our conversation with Brad. I thoroughly enjoyed getting to hear you guys talk about these kinds of things and to just, like I think I said before, bask in the glow of this incredible vision that you guys have. And I, like I said, again, the importance of this across our country cannot be understated, in my opinion. This is such a valuable thing.
Yeah, so good. So we started this thing in Montreal called Company of Pastors. Brad's going to talk about that. But yeah, our desire really is to see pastors working together and hopefully as a result of that, churches working together and kingdom resources being utilized. So yeah, I'm excited for this too. So why don't we
just jump right in.
We'll go into that now. So glad that you're joining us today. Thanks, Brad, for being here. I call you a friend because I don't know what else to call you. So a friend and fellow Montreal pastor, pastor of Grace Church Verdun. And you know what, man? Before I let you say anything, I look at some of your Strava times, and are you on steroids or are you taking, like, is there a confrontation that needs to happen here? Cause man, you run fast. Like you told me you had like no meniscus and I have no meniscus and I don't know what
those
you're
are
doing.
Short. Well, there's two secrets. Number one, those are short distances.
Yes.
And so don't ask me when you start talking about your marathon stuff, you notice I kind of go silent.
Yeah.
I have nothing to add at that point. Anything beyond, you know, 10K, forget it. And I will admit that the last two times I have had my Boston Terrier running with me, when I say running with me, I actually mean pulling me.
Wow.
So think of like the parachute training, but just in reverse, where instead of you dragging a parachute, you got a parachute dragging you.
Oh, man. So,
what is Strava?
Full disclosure.
What are we talking about
right
now?
Oh, he doesn't know what Strava is, Brad. We can't tell him.
Oh, sorry, okay. Jordan.
That's fine.
Yeah.
I hear running and I just tune right out. Like, I'm no, thank you. What is that proverb? A fool runs when no one's chasing him. Isn't that what it is?
Or like dripping on a roof or something. I don't know. There's something good about it for sure.
Yeah.
No, Strava is an application on one of those smartphone devices that tracks
I've heard of those
activity.
things. Okay, I gotcha.
The
It's a
interwebs, you connect
Facebook.
to stuff and you know, it's crazy. GPS and things.
It's a social media platform for runners, cyclists, swimmers, and other stupid stuff.
I was gonna say other
So,
crazy people like yourselves. So that sounds fun.
well, yeah, I mean there are levels of crazy on there that really are wild,
There
but
are.
so Strava has built this system that is just, I think, really incredible because I got, I don't know what it was, a few months ago for the first time ever, I got this thing and it was like local legend. And I'm like, what is local legend? You know? And so
That'll
I was
mess
with
with your
my,
ego, dude.
yeah. And so I'm with my friend Francois and I'm like, Francois, what's this local legend thing? He's like, oh, you got a participation trophy. I'm
Nice.
like, what? He's like, yeah, you participate in that segment more than anyone else. Like, way to go. I'm like, oh, so this has nothing to do with my performance. He's like, no. I said, all right, great.
Unfortunately not.
But if you can't perform the best, show up most often and
Do it
you
more
get
than
stuff.
them. Hey, that's great wisdom right there.
Yeah.
That's great
So
wisdom. I love it.
anyway, I man, that was a long digression. But okay, so Brad, you've been pastoring in Montreal like 16 years, something like that. Your pastoral career can almost
16 years.
drink beer here. You know, that's wild. So how
That's one
old
way to
were
look
you?
at it.
Yeah, it's true. How old were you
So
when you
I
started
was,
as lead pastor?
I was 25, and so which is significant because it's quite telling as to how desperate Grace Church was at the time. Completely green, no pastoral experience. They were looking for pulses. You know how you see like the pictures. You know, you see the pictures of they're checking for COVID and they have like the thermometer, they're just doing foreheads to make sure that's basically what they were doing. Is this person real? Do they have a body temperature and a pulse? We'll take them. So
Wow, man. So this is like, you know, if there was Strava for pastors, it would be like a participation pastor kind of thing. Like
And
we're
it
looking
all
for
comes full circle, man. I love
local
that.
legend.
Oh, it's amazing.
Exactly.
Okay, so we know that you're, well, I mean, you run, but your big thing is like cycling. But tell us about some of your hobbies.
I got in. So basically, as soon as I got into my mid-30s, we're going on the keeping on the realm of physical activity. As soon as I got to mid-30s, early 30s, I started realizing my body could no longer take the abuse of team sports and all that. So kind of got started getting into triathlons. Swimming, running, and biking, and then that was, I what I've realized is as the older you get, it doesn't mean you have to stop, but you have to really confine yourself to linear movement. No more of that side to side lateral movement. If you just keep me going straight, and I'm good. Throw me in any other direction, and things go bad quickly when it comes to my joints. And so that's something I could do. I was never a long distance kind of guy. But it definitely stretched me, and so I've enjoyed doing that. I've jacked up my shoulder a couple times this past year, so and my knee, I tore my meniscus, so running and swimming has been kind of curtailed, and so I've kind of stuck mostly to biking at this point, cycling. Now I'm indoors, so that's my outlet, physical outlet. God's blessed us with a wonderful family. We've got four kids, wonderful wife of 20 years, going on 21 years. And so I've realized I like just being home and just being there. That's a hobby to me. Just hanging out, not doing anything, not having where to go. And then when the kids start to get too rowdy, I go on a bike, I go running, something like that. And one outlet or hobby is kind of a or one hobby is an outlet for my other hobby, and that is just being home. So yeah, and I'm like most pastors, I enjoy reading and all that. I don't know any pastors that don't enjoy reading of some sort. It depends on what you're reading, but
Yeah, man.
me in a
Well,
nutshell.
yeah, that's good. That's really good. So, we've known each other for a while. And you know, it's astounding to me when I keep meeting pastors, who are in the same city for a while. So Montreal has a
Yeah.
very interesting context of kind of like having people come in and then having them leave. So tell us about how pastors in the city of Montreal or Montreal area have historically worked together or not worked together in the city.
Yeah, they haven't. They haven't. You know, what's funny is, I mean, you kind of touched on it initially there. Montreal, it's in Quebec. It's not your typical mission field. It's not your typical, you know, North American, you know, city. It will eat you up ministerially, pastorally, whether it's the language, whether it's the politics. It'll definitely mess with you. And so a lot of pastors just kind of come and go. You know, 16 years, it's kind of funny. Unfortunately, I was telling Jordan earlier, unfortunately, you know, I've been here for 16 years, and that's unfortunately one of the longer tenured, you know, English pastors in the area, which shouldn't be the case. You think of size city the size of Montreal in North America, you'd think surely there's, you know, guys that have been there for 30, 40, you know, years, you know, faithfully preaching the word of God, and it's just not the case. Which Dwight, you know, and so as a result, so partly the, you know, primarily it's because guys are just coming and going. The second you start to get to know a guy and start to build into one another's lives and encourage one another, he leaves. And second, I think it is unfortunately just the reality that you kind of get into this kind of foxhole mentality here in Montreal, where I'll dig in, you know, I'll you know, dig my own foxhole here. You do yours over there. You know, we're fighting the same enemy, and we're gunning for the same thing. But you do it over there, I'll do it over here, and kind of never the twain shall meet. And so it's kind of this silo mentality, unfortunately. What I was telling Jordan earlier, the very fact that we're having this conversation is weird. You know, the fact that it's a novel concept that pastors, you know, would get together, like-minded pastors get together and sharpen and encourage one another. You know, why the heck does a podcast need to, why would that solicit a podcast? But it does, you know, and you guys are bang on. You're going in the right direction on wanting to pursue this. And Dwight, you know, if you want to see this in the rest of Canada, yeah, absolutely, it should happen. The fact that it doesn't happen, especially in a place like Montreal, where the last thing you need to be is an island unto yourself.
Right. So, I mean, you talked about the fact that, like, you know, guys are obviously leaving. You don't have really a chance to build those relationships. But have you tried to really do anything or get something going in the city? And what, so what have you tried and that has not worked up until this point? How about that?
So full disclosure, a lot of it is I've been digging my own foxhole also. Yeah, I'm guilty of that. That's the mentality you get into, right? So, well, you kind of look around. Well, they're not doing anything. They're not doing anything. I guess we're going at it alone here. Now, with that said, there were times, several times that I had. So within our denomination, you know, association, I had tried to start several times, kind of a prayer meeting, loose prayer meeting, kind of fellowship time, where it was not, there's no format to it. There's no really structure to it, which I think was kind of a was not smart. I think we should have added that, but just kind of a time of prayer. And you know, for it would happen for, you know, a few months, and then sure enough, it would start to kind of peter out. And so we tried to do that a couple times, and it would peter out. And in fact, when I first came up here in 2005, I was invited by one pastor. He's no longer, he went home to be with the Lord a few years ago. Older guy, I had known him as a kid growing up in Montreal as an adolescent before moving away. And he'd invited me to kind of this interdenominational, you know, pastor meeting. Basically, when I say interdenominational, basically, you got a couple POC guys and a couple Baptist guys, and okay, you get in a room and pray together. And that kept me ministerially sane in the very beginning. I thought this was great. I was there. I was a keener. I was 25 years old, I was the youngest guy there. And I was there, you know, we're supposed to meet at whatever time, 8 o'clock on a Friday morning. You know, I'm there, 7:50, 7:55, waiting outside, waiting for them to open the doors just to have some fellowship time and prayer time with other pastors. It was great. But like most other times, it just kind of petered out. You know, a couple of the guys left, you know, Quebec and Montreal, and then just kind of, you know, died, unfortunately. So, yeah.
Yeah, man. So it's a sad reality, right? And
Yeah.
I mean, it's one thing to go, I don't know, unreached people group, no Christians there ever. at least in any mass, and be like, yes, I don't have a group of pastors that I meet with. It's like, well, of course you don't. But it's a strange thing to be in a city where there are churches, there are pastors, there are people that are participating, you know, like everyone's like they're in the game, and to not have them, you know, engaged whatsoever, it's very strange. So
It
what I
is.
would love to talk about during this time is I know you've been involved, and I've been involved, we've been involved, but starting something called this Company of Pastors. And so I want to focus a whole conversation on that. So can you tell us where the idea or the, I guess maybe the term Company of Pastors really even comes from?
Well, I think you termed that. I think you coined that. You
I
just
did
ripped it off
not
of
coin that.
Calvin.
Yeah.
No, you didn't coin it. Yeah,
That's right.
Calvin coined it. Yeah, the idea. So, kind of back to your first question, or it was. So one of the guys that are in it now, that's in it now, Matt Fraser. He had just come off the mission field from Ukraine, and I don't know if he was asking you the same questions as he was me, Dwight. But he's basically asking me what's going on in in Montreal, the English pastors. And I said, well, nothing really. He goes, would you guys meet at all? Like, no, not really. Well, why not? Well, that's a good question. I don't know. And I kind of gave him my reasons, kind of what I just told you guys. And he thought, well, shoot, you guys should meet or something. Oh, yeah, we should. You get it together and I'll be there. And so it's funny. So between that and a couple other times, I started meeting other pastors. Like, wait a minute, you're an English pastor serving, 5 kilometers, 10 kilometers from Grace and Verdun. You're not crazy. You're not weird. You're doing what we're doing. How did we ever not connect? And so we started talking about kind of formalizing it. It's one thing to say, hey, we're just going to get together. Anybody who wants to get together, great. That's great, but it never works. It never works out long term. If you're not going to put some structure to it, it's rarely going to, work. It has to start from a grassroots level, but then it has to contain a little bit of organization to it. So we realized we really got to kind of structure this thing a little bit. And so that's what kind of brought us to the idea of the Company of Pastors. Back when, half century ago, half millennia ago, Calvin had started what he'd called the Company of Pastors, this group of pastors, about 120, I think, of which were in the Geneva area, in and around the Geneva area, where they met together to build up one another, to build up each other's pastoral theology. And I think really just to, for lack of a better term, sharpen one another, make each other better pastors. If we're going to put it in kind of layman's terms, just, hey, let's make each other better. Let's sharpen each other. And it was a, you kind of couple that with, so that's where the term Company of Pastors came from. And you start to think, down through the ages, number one, the biblical concept. You never see these guys alone. Anytime you see the epistles, what do you see? You see Paul, you see Barnabas, you see Titus, Timothy, Romans 16. Paul rattles off a list of, 20 some odd people that were his co-laborers. Like, these guys aren't doing it alone, and they're apostles. A little while ago, I was reading Amazing Grace, book by Eric Metaxas, talking about William Wilberforce. He was in Parliament there, member of Parliament, and was responsible for getting rid of the abolition of slavery, at least for as far as the British Empire went. And in the book, he talks a lot about the Clapham sect, is what they came to be known by, Clapham. And his Clapham was a neighborhood there in London, and basically all these guys that were like-minded, their common bond was Christ. Their common objective and goal was the abolition of slavery, but also just the moralization of Britain. And so they all lived in the same, literally in the same neighborhood, Clapham area. And that's what really sparked. So we always think of William Wilberforce as, the leading proponent to the abolition of slavery, and he was, but he wasn't alone. He had many other guys there, including William Pitt, which ended up being one of the first prime ministers of Britain. And they did it together as this group. They sharpened one another, and Metaxas gets into a little bit. They sharpened one another and honed their skills and pursued a common goal, which at that point was the abolition of slavery. So we really just kind of took that idea of, both the Company of Pastors and the concept of co-laborers, and thought this should happen, especially in a place like in any city, in any pastoral setting, ministerial setting, you know, all the more in Montreal, where we're few and far between. You know, our ministry is few and far between, and our and laborers are few and far between.
Oh man, I think I love this so much. Especially in our context today, where you know, platforming has become such a big thing, and the idea of almost like inherently churches in competition with one another is prevalent in so many different areas. This is so important and so crucial. So, I mean, you've talked a little bit about where the kind of the idea comes from, and maybe you've answered this question already, but for you guys specifically, what's kind of the vision of Company of Pastors for Montreal?
Yeah, it's I think it is to ultimately I think if the bride of Christ isn't our, you know, our end goal, then we're just wasting time. So okay, if the bride of Christ, the maturity of the bride of Christ, the gospel message within Montreal, in order for that to happen, there has to be healthy Christians and healthy churches. In order for there to be healthy Christians, healthy churches, there should be healthy pastors. And so that's where we come in. We want this to be a place where we are able to come alongside these guys, and build into one another, encourage one another. The last thing a church needs is a burnt out pastor. The last thing a church needs is an unequipped pastor. The last thing a church needs is a discouraged pastor. So we're gathering together. We want to encourage one another. We want to equip one another. We want to build into one another, make us healthy. Go over the Pastoral Theology 101 on a regular basis. This is what we're supposed to be about. This is what we're supposed to be doing. By doing that, we are going back into our churches, our local congregations, healthy, equipped, encouraged. And then what do you think that's going to happen? You know, what do you think that's going to produce? It's going to produce healthy, equipped, encouraged Christians. And what's that going to do? Well, now you've got some healthy, you know, encouraged, equipped Christians going about the city, you know, spreading the gospel, that's what we want. And so if here we're starting with the pastors at at this stage.
Yeah, it's really good, man. So, I mean, we've all been involved in interesting pastor meetings, haven't we? Some might call them painful. You know, bad coffee, and we get together and we just complain and we call it a pastorale or whatever we call it. I don't know if it's French or English, but and maybe then we pray for one another at the end, right? And we pray that the Lord would remove that complaining person from the congregation or whatever. And I know it's over exaggerating, but I mean, every pastor knows what I'm talking about, right? Those strange type of meetings. So I want to just get very specific. You know, this Company of Pastors, right? Great idea. You know, sounds really good. We're gonna encourage, we're gonna, you know, reach a whole city, we're gonna do all this stuff. We're gonna take over with the gospel, right? Amazing. But like the meetings, like when these pastors get together, what does that look like? And I want to get real specific. Like, how often do they get together? How long? What's the focus? How are you not How are you protecting from them becoming what I just described, or the thing you said before, where it's like, this works for a few months, but then it's just going to peter off again. So what do the meetings look like?
Good coffee.
Yes. Yeah, it
Well, it
is good
has to
coffee.
be.
Yeah.
Has to be.
It's a bad meeting. It's going to be bad coffee. Just wasting time to go home at that point.
Our generation of
No, you,
pastors are snobs with coffee, aren't they?
yeah, we're spoiled. We're a spoiled group of people. Yeah, Maxwell House and Tim Hortons doesn't cut it. And I know that's anathema to even say that on a Canadian
If there's a guy named Tim Maxwell, he should
podcast.
start a coffee thing.
Think
Tim
so?
Maxwell. I don't know, or Max
That
Horton
would
or
get
something.
confusing.
It would. It would.
You start with that. You see, start with coffee. But here's the thing. It's you've got to have guys committed, first off. I'm done, you know, back when if you have to sell the idea to a pastor, just don't. If you got to sell the idea to pastor and try to, you know, entice him to come, no, you're gonna love it. There's gonna be guys there, there's gonna be good coffee there, you know, it won't be that long, don't worry, you know. And then if you can make the time, you know, okay, yeah, Lord willing, I'll make the, yeah. So no, if you have to sell it, forget it. You're uninvited now, right? So you find the guys that are they're like-minded. You find the guys that want to be there, and now you put some structure to it. So here's what our meetings look like. We get together, we're getting in the room, got our coffee, got our thing. We do fellowship a little bit, but oftentimes those pastoral, prayer meetings, all the ones I used to be in, what do? You talk for 45 minutes about just stuff. There's nothing wrong with that, but the majority of the time you're just talking stuff. It could be weather, it could be the Montreal Canadiens, it could be this or that. And then you start kind of, and then you get into prayer. And there's nothing wrong with fellowship, and so that's good. So we start out just some fellowship. We made it at noon so the guys can eat, lunch together, can bring their lunch or grab whatever snacks that, we're providing, and get to know each other a little bit. And then we open up with usually some announcements, some updates. Hey, here's what's going on. And then open it up to, what is a pre-planned topic, competency for pastors. This is what we're going to talk about. We're going to talk about spiritual maturity. We're going to talk about preaching. We're going to talk about, missional, living for the pastor, what that looks like. And, all these things that are really just, if you are a pastor, if you've gone through, pastoral, theology courses or, graduate in pastoral ministry of some sort, you've had these. You've had these, you've sat through them, you've read the book, and we're doing it again. Because we forget them, or we get distracted by other things, and so we're bringing it right back to that. And so we're not. So we come. So we work. We have it planned, right? So we're not just ad-libbing while we're there. It's not impromptu. We have it planned. We've done some study, whether it's myself or Dwight. We rotate, and we present to the guys. Hey, this is what we're talking about. Here's a you know here's a here's the topic. Here's the passage. And then we kind of turn it over and we ask the probing questions, just like you guys are doing now. We ask those probing questions, very applicable, practical questions as far as it pertains to our pastoral ministries. And then at that point, once we've you've got to be able to facilitate it well. Number one, it's not a an opportunity for us to teach. We have those opportunities, many other times. It's not this time for a didactic, lesson. It's time for us to present a truth, present something that we need to be about, and then turn it over and just facilitate the discussion well. So when one guy's talking too much, let's go to somebody else. When we think we've exhausted a topic, let's go on to the next question, kind of thing. And we'll do that. And then after that, it is a time for prayer because these are hurting guys. It would be unwise for us to come and say, "Hey, this is what you guys need to learn. This is what we need to know." And then, okay, let's close in prayer. These are hurting guys. They will have just had really bad meetings. They will have just had, really bad Sundays. They may have just laid an egg in the pulpit, right? They may have they may on the be on the brink of burnout. And so there are hurts. And so that's the time we want to hear those hurts. Because you know what? 9 times out of 10, they won't be able to share some of these things with their elders, let alone, people within the church, because they don't want to scare the church. And if they have those times, those moments where they want to quit, they can't say that. Even though they're not serious about it, they can't just say, "Hey, listen, I'm thinking about just quitting this week." As fellow pastors, we can hear that and filter that and say, "Yep, been there, done that, and I'm there now." And so we could pray for us. And this is a time of prayer. And at that point, we try to keep it to 1.5 hours. It's not this long, open-ended thing. And I think it should be. I think it should be very punctual, both on the front end and the back end. Start on time, end on time, get the guys there on time, so that you can make the most of the time. And if they want to get together afterwards and go out for coffee or do whatever, go for it. You definitely want to encourage that. But there is a
Man,
structure.
I love that. I think I agree with you. I think it's important to structure. I love the intentionality behind that. Now, I imagine that it could be really easy to kind of get lost in the weeds in the discussion with people that come from different beliefs, traditions, backgrounds. So do you guys have like boundaries around theological things or areas of that nature as a group?
Yeah, we do. It's kind of we kind of it's a kind of loosely reformed in the sense that you it, it you're comfortable if you're a staunch, Calvinist, you'll be comfortable. If you're kind of a loose, Calvinist, you're just trying to, you're there, you believe in some of the tenets, but you just kind of loose, then you're both equally comfortable. But I think even more than that, I think it, I think there's an agreement to complementarian, theology. And I think we've kind of toyed with the idea, we've kind of shot around. Basically, if you can adhere to, kind of TGC statement of faith, then you're going to be in good company. You're going to be in like-minded company. And that's not trying to be exclusive for the sake of exclusivity or trying to create our own tribe. The purpose is you want it to be, for lack of a better term, a safe space for these pastors. They get in, they don't have to watch what they're going to say. If they're having trouble with, somebody so and so in their church that, that disagrees with them doctrinally, they don't want to, get in some kind of doctrinal disagreement there. That's not the place for it. And so, though we don't exclude anybody, we've kind of said, if you're outside of that, group, you may not feel 100% comfortable, you're more than welcome, but this is kind of there are limits and boundaries that we're kind of trying to create and adhere to just for the comfort level of the guys there.
And even, one of the guys that joined this company is himself has a different conviction around something than his church does. And for him to get to come in and explain that and to say, ah, this feels like home. This is the place where I can thrive. And I mean, the situation's very complicated and I don't need to go into it, but it's I mean, for that guy, I'm like, oh, we exist for him. Like
That's awesome.
this is a place for this guy to get to be in this fraternity type of environment for himself, which is really great.
There's a comfort level there.
Yeah. So obviously we know that not everything's going to get done in an hour and a half. Doesn't matter how good the coffee is. What are the ways that this company of pastors is aiming to do ministry outside of the meeting time? And this can be formal or informal. What are some of the things that you've heard about, or some of the things that we've done as a company of pastors together?
I think, so we're still in the early stages, right? I think we're gonna see, I think we've yet to see, how God's gonna use this and to what extent he's gonna use it. So I'm kind of encouraged to see what happens over the course of next year. And so we should do this again next year. I think we'll have some cool stories at that point. So part of it is it is part of a larger group, that we've called, Movement Montreal, that where there is some shared youth ministry activities, right? There is which I've been which extremely encouraged by, courses for everyone. So once a month, our churches, both the guys who are in the company of pastors and outside, I think it's outside, maybe they're all part of our group, but started really a Bible college level, Sunday school on steroids, once a month, all day, teaching. And so we've all kind of, so myself, Dwight, and a buddy of ours, Matt, we've taken turns, and we each teach a certain class where we come alongside and help these churches whose pastors are part of the company of pastors. So they're involved. So let's say you got, Bob, he's in the company of pastors. Well, Bob has his church, so Bob knows who we are, and he trusts us as part of being part of the company of pastors. And so Bob doesn't have the bandwidth to be able to provide all the resources he has for his congregation. And so he says, hey, company of pastors, Movement Montreal, they've got these courses for everyone going. Why don't you go once a month? Go take a deep dive into some of these things, these theologies and doctrines, and that you've wanted to do that I haven't been able to provide for you. And so then Bob sends his people there. Once a month we meet up and we teach, and then we send them back for Bob to now have one other resource in his shepherding, holster, to be able to use to meet, that individual's needs. And so that's been kind of neat. So I think it, coming to pastors, I think what you have is there's a trust that happens there, right? And so if I know that, you know, Dwight is good at this, or has somebody in his church that is good at this, but I'm not, nor do I have someone in my church. From what I've known, I have now gotten to know Dwight in company of pastors on a, you know, over a year, 2, 3 year basis. I know he's going to take good care of them, and I don't have to be territorial in any way. And so, hey, you know, they've got some counseling going on over here. Why don't you know, pursue that? I'd like to see that happening with our pastors. I'd like to see, you know, our pastors, not all pastors are going to get along I don't know, on an intimate level. I mean, you know, you're not always going to be best friends with the guys. You're going to have different hobbies. You're going to have different likes and dislikes and personalities. So I'd like to see the guys that have shared personalities, you know, get together and start ministering to one another, you know, on the side. You know, it's funny. So we host them here at Grace Church. And Dwight, by the time you leave, there's still other guys that are still putzing around. They will hang out here forever.
That's why I do it
They're
at
at
your
least.
place.
I got last time I had to leave, I said, "Guys, there's the door. Just lock up when you're done. I gotta go."
If you just give
And
them a key, it'd
but
be
it
easier, yeah.
basically, I'm gonna have to at some point teach them how to set the alarm. Just because I didn't want to stop them, you know. So this is the time they get. I think that's one of the that's a. A big byproduct of this, and that is just that fraternity, that fellowship. We're not trying to create fraternity. You can't try and create that. That just happens. You create the structure, and then just trust that that kind of stuff will happen. And I'll be sitting in my office. My office is kind of attached to the conference room. I'll usually shut my door, but those guys are out there talking the whole time. Like, can I get you guys something? You want some more coffee? You know, something else. And so, and that's been neat to watch some of those relationships develop.
That's awesome. So how long have you guys been doing this, just out of curiosity?
Not long enough.
We're counting in days still, right? I think.
We've been doing it. So we started, we had a couple little pilot meetings, you know, back before the summer. Then kind of took the summer off and, you know, kind of retooled some stuff and started back in September. So we've been doing it so formally as company pastors, you know, probably for the last 4 months or so.
Right on. Right on. How many guys do you have coming to your regular get-togethers?
Gonna say, I think there's about 15 to 20 on the list. Let's say 15, 16, 17. I think on any given time, there's usually about 12 or 13 of us. Some of them are around that.
Right on.
So yeah, if they all came, it'd be a little too big.
Yeah, so that kind of leads into the next question. How big do you think groups can become until before they get ineffective?
Yeah, and that happens.
Yeah,
That's especially
totally.
in that kind of group. It loses that intimacy that's there if it gets too big. And then it just gets weird if it's not big enough.
That's right.
And so I think it really depends on the guys that are there. But I think in my head, you know, the times if I think back, okay, that was a good conversation, or that was really lacking, you know, some of that. I think around that 10 guy mark, when you have 10 pastors that are participating, that's a full, you know, that's a full slate right there. Less than that depends on the guys. You know, you might have five, you know, pastors that who get along really well and they can carry a conversation and sharpen each other well. You know, you can have five guys that are kind of more introverted and the conversation just doesn't flow as smoothly and you're not able to sharpen each other as much. So it really depends on the dynamic of the guys. But I think the guys that we have, I think more than 10 or 11, it starts to get a little crowded. But I think we're not the stage yet. We should say, okay, no, let's split or anything, just because there will be guys that drop out. That's the nature of it, unfortunately. We'll try to mitigate against that and we'll try to avoid it the best way possible. But likelihood there will be guys. And so what last thing you want to do, and this happens oftentimes in groups and small groups or you know churches, you split, you know, for good reasons, but then those two groups now can't sustain themselves because the guys you have five committed guys and then five, you know, non-committed guys. So really to, you know. So you got to have that.
Once we can't fit in Grace Church anymore, then we have to do something.
Under COVID restrictions, yeah.
Yeah, that's
That's
right.
right.
So I mean, we've been talking about this, and just to wrap this up, okay, so we've been in Montreal for, I don't know, 11 years, I think now. And yeah, I went to something at the very, very beginning, I think, with Glenn Smith, who's a guy local in the city, well known in Montreal and well known in Canada. But again, there just wasn't like the stickiness of that group that I really perceive to be there here. I see a desire for revival alive in these guys. I see a desire to be utilized without compromising, right? To reach a culture that's very anti everything that we're really for, and yet not like there's not that what's the word, curmudgeon or whatever it is. Like we don't have those in our group. It's not like these guys who've been beat up for years who are just angry. It's like some guys have been around for quite a while, and they're still hopeful. You know, they're waiting. It's like they're waking up every day, like, Lord, is today the day that you're going to help me see more of you, and the day that my church is going to see more of you, and the day when our city's going to experience new life. And I just think that's invigorating to be around a group of guys that are like, man, life sucks. Life's hard. Jesus is here. He's good, and he knows what he's doing. And so, how do we do this together? Right. And there's just this, there's this intense energy, I think, coming out of it and spilling into all hours of the afternoon. But how, so just from your humble perspective, Brad, how could something like this get started in other places around Canada?
I think it starts with, you take three or four guys that want to do and see what you just described, right? You want to see Christ magnified in the city that they're at. They are humble, right? They're not territorial. They are as much committed to seeing their brother in Christ and his church thrive than they are their own. And they really don't care which is which, right? You want those guys to come together and say, we're stronger together. We're stronger together, and this is a lot of fun. It's fun. It's to sit around. I mean, what we're doing now, this is fun. This is a nice break for me. To sit around and talking about stuff that we that means a lot to us, that we enjoy talking about. And so you guys throughout the country, who are in a local area, who are humbled, they're not territorial, they want to meet together, they have an attraction to seeing, the glory of God, dispelled throughout their city. And so that what they're going to say is, we want this. This is important for us to meet together. And so you take three or four guys that want that are committed to that. And if it's only three or four guys, then fine. Start with that. And then from there, just start meeting and let there be a commitment that's there. There has to be a commitment level there. Don't, for any of the guys come along and say, I'll be there, Lord willing. Well, you know what? I think the Lord really wills that you do be there. Unless, why don't you carve it out on your calendar and make it happen? So do it, carve it on your calendar, make it happen, make it a priority, see it as a priority. And then once you have those three or four guys, and then they can look at, Lord willing, in a year, two, 3 years from now, they can look back at, a company of pastors out of Montreal, Quebec, and say, hey, it worked there. This is what it looks like. This is what shouldn't happen. This is what should happen. And let's replicate that in our own context here in fill in the say, Barrie, or Toronto or Calgary or Abbotsford, whatever, wherever. So I think it starts with just a few guys that have a same goal. They're not going to be, they may not have the same philosophy of ministry, and that's fine. But their end goal is the same, and they enjoy one another, and they have a heart to sharpen one another, and they enjoy the pastoral ministry. Like you said, you don't want the curmudgeon. You want the guy that's excited, about shepherding, about pastoring and preaching. And you put them in a room with three or four other guys who enjoy pastoring, preaching, and teaching. You've got a fun time there, like a God honoring, God glorifying, moment right there, and bottle that, organize it and replicate it.
That's really good. I'm excited for this to continue in our city. I'm excited for this to and I know these types of things exist. I mean, you can call it whatever you want. Like, not everyone has the coffee experience and the complaining and the stuff we were talking about earlier. Some pastors are really doing this well. And I would say if you're part of something that's going well like that, don't just keep it to yourself, right? Invite people into that. Let younger guys come into that. Let older guys who have never seen something like this happen in their city that they've been ministering in for a long time into that. Like, let's share this stuff so that pastors really are taken care of well.
Well, that younger guy component is important. You know, you and I talked about this. You know, do we want our youth pastors, you know, going to this? You know, yeah. We want them to see, like, I want my kids sitting at the table and with me when we have company over to see this is how you engage one another. You know, this is how you, in the same way, you know, in a less patronizing way, you know, have the youth pastors there say, hey, this is what pastoral ministry is like, but youth pastor, senior pastor, teacher, whatever, you know, this is the benefit of coming together as like-minded, you know, shepherds and doing this, watch and learn and you know, join in, you know, when and where you can.
Oh, that's good. I have a lot going on in life, so if anyone wants to talk about company and pastors and what's happening, please contact Brad directly. He would love to have 4 hours of coffee with
Absolutely.
you and sit with you and be with you. So
Exactly.
we'll give you his details, his home address, which bedroom he stays in, all those things. So
Might
or
as well. Everybody
you can
else
just
has it,
stalk
so.
him on Strava. So.
Exactly. Fair
But
enough.
man, yeah, thanks so much, Brad, for joining us. And I really do think that this is a significant part. If the Lord is going to do things in our city, like it doesn't seem like it's the big fire, right? Pastors getting together and doing this stuff. But I think it gives a course, and we're going to stay that course. And we know that doing these things is what we need, and we don't need to reinvent the wheel. And yeah, I appreciate your leadership on this.
No, it's been fun. Good conversation. Thanks, guys.
Thanks so much, Brad.
Anytime. We'll do it again in a year. I'll tell you how it goes. And if we mess it up, it was our fault, not because it was a bad idea.
Yeah, definitely Brad's fault for sure.
Yeah,
So.
exactly. I'll take it.
All right, man. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
Thanks so much for joining us today. I really hope that you appreciated the content that you heard. And as you're on your way out, would you do a few things? Number one, would you subscribe? That'll make sure that you get all the new content that Acts 29 Canada is putting out delivered directly to you. Second, would you give us a 5-star rating? That'll just help us to get noticed and help this content get out to people faster. And third, would you share this information with anyone that you think will benefit from it? Again, thanks so much for listening and have a great day.